So I'm starting here with topic one, cell biology. I'm on page one, and this page is about the cell theory. The box is called Introducing the Cell Theory at the very top. So first of all, what is the cell theory? The cell theory is made of three parts. It states that all living things are made of cells. The cells are the smallest possible units of life. This means that you cannot have anything less than a cell to be alive. You need at least one cell. Half a cell is a dead cell, okay? And the third part of the cell theory states that cells can only come from pre-existing cells. So you must already have life for more life to be there. So it's not possible simply for living things to emerge out of non-living material. Now, of course, the very first cell must have emerged out of non-living material. So that is, these are the three parts of the cell theory. All living things are made of cells. The cells is the smallest unit of life, and cells only come from pre-existing cells. And in the drawing in this book box, you see two cells. So on the left side, a human cheek cell, that is an animal cell, and a moss leaf cell on the right, that is a plant cell. Now, these both of these cells, I think, are rather simplistic in their drawing, but they do share certain similarities. And one of the important similarities is that all cells, they have a plasma membrane on the outside, and they have a cytoplasm, which is the liquid content of the cell. Not all cells have a nucleus. I mean, the plant and the human cheek cell, or the moss and the human cheek cell, they have a nucleus, but there are also other cell types around that do not have a nucleus, and these cells that don't have a nucleus are called prokaryotes. And those two cells in the book are called eukaryotes, and that means that they have a nucleus. A eukaryote means a true nucleus. And one thing that you might want to do here already, I mean, that's not really the purpose of the box, but still, I think this drawing is much better in comparing plant and animal cells than a drawing later on. And because there are three important differences. First of all, you can see that the moss leaf cell, the plant cell, has chloroplasts. It has a large central vacuole. It's labeled with vacuole membrane. There's a sap in the vacuole on the right side. You can see that. And the third difference is that the moss leaf cell, the plant cells, they have cell walls. Okay, so that is basically the three important differences between plant and animal cells. So now let's move on to the next box. The next box is called Exceptions to the Cell Theory. And I don't know if exceptions is really the best way to say it, but there's some certain special cases where there are certain organisms or certain things that don't really look like the drawings that we have here at the top. And one of these examples is skeletal muscles. So these are the muscles that we have, and they connect to the bone, and they are used for our movement. And these skeletal muscles, if you look under the microscope, they look kind of unique in the sense that they are made of long muscle fibers, and they can be up to 30 centimeters in length. And they are actually, if you look at them under the microscope, you see that these cells are very long, 30 centimeters in length, and they have multiple nuclei. So they have, they are fused cells fused together, and they have multiple nuclei, and they don't really look like the cells that we have in the top drawing. A second example are the giant algae, like Acetabularia. Wow, what a name. And they look a little bit mushroom-shaped, and there's a nice drawing in there. It's not a mushroom, it's an algae. They can be 10 centimeters in size, and they have one nucleus. So actually, is this now one cell? It's kind of interesting. I mean, skeletal muscle having multiple nuclei. Now we have also a pretty large organism here, which only has one nucleus. So it also really does not really look like a conventional cell, okay? And the last example, number three, are called aseptate fungi. And they are similar to the skeletal muscles, that they are also not divided into subunits, but the cells are fused together, and there are also multiple nuclei in a cell. Okay? And now this does not mean that the cell theory is wrong. This just because you see that they're still, all of them are still have some kind of a cellular basis, but they are, I think the box just wants to show you a little bit that nature is quite diverse, okay? And that nature is very diverse. And if you look long enough and close enough, you're going to find some interesting variations of the rule. So the next box on the right side is called Drawings in Biology, and very honest, there is really not a lot that I can say. It's very, very self-explanatory. One thing that you have to know is that you have to be able to draw reasonably well in biology course, otherwise you're going to lose points. And this box summarizes this a little bit on how you should draw. Okay, so this was essentially page one, and now let's move on and let's flip over to page two. And page two has the title Unicellular and Multicellular Organisms. First of all, what is a unicellular organism? A unicellular organism is a single-celled organism, and multicellular organisms are organisms that are made of course, many cells. What is an organism? An organism, the word organism simply means a living thing, okay? Viruses, by the way, are not organisms. Viruses are not alive, just side information here, okay? And let's have a look at the box over here. Again, there are two cells. The left one is called Paramecium, and the right one is known as Chlamydomonas. And the point of this top box with the title Functions of Life in Unicellular Organisms, the point of this box is to show that Paramecium and Chlamydomonas are actually, well, similar and different in certain respects, okay? They're similar because they carry out all of the functions of life, but they do so differently. And as a matter of fact, I think it's not only the Paramecium and Chlamydomonas, I think all living things should be included here as well, because all living things carry out the same functions of life, but we do so differently, okay? Why they have chosen Paramecium and Chlamydomonas, now I don't know, I have to be very honest with you, but if you want to, you can also include the human being as a third organism in here as well, okay? Or a tree even, yeah? So because all of these functions which are listed on the left side, all of these functions are the same, okay? So first of all, let's have a look at some of the similarities. My advice is if you look at Paramecium Chlamydomonas, why don't you just Google it and try to find pictures or YouTube videos? I think it makes it much easier and more interesting to actually see how they live in water. Both of them are water organisms, by the way. They're fresh water organisms. So Paramecium and Chlamydomonas, they do the following, and I'm just going to list the functions here. Nutrition, growth, response, excretion, metabolism, homeostasis, and reproduction. Okay, now let's take it one by one, and let's compare this, okay? So first of all, Paramecium is a heterotroph. This means that it needs to eat food in order to get energy from, okay? It needs organic material. In that sense, it's actually similar to us human beings because we also need to do that. Yep. So it feeds on smaller organisms, and it kind of takes it up into the cell by a process called endocytosis. And in endocytosis, the cell membrane of the Paramecium folds inwards and takes up the food. Chlamydomonas, however, on the right side, also needs food, but it produces its own food by a process called photosynthesis. So actually, just like the plants, it does photosynthesis. It's able to produce its own food, but still, they do so differently now. The Paramecium eats the food, Chlamydomonas produces its own food, but the function is the same. It's nutrition. All living things need food, okay? The next one, growth. Paramecium grows in size, and also Chlamydomonas grows in size. How does Paramecium grow? Where does all the material come from? Well, because when it eats food, then it digests the food and it uses these nutrients to make more cell mass. Okay, so the cell grows. And Chlamydomonas produces its own food, makes sugar, produces by photosynthesis. And this food now is used and is converted to other materials that make up the cell. Okay. So that is, it increases in size. And what about human beings? Well, we human beings, naturally, we also grow, but we do so by cell division. But it doesn't matter. It's we all grow. Response is that both of them, the Paramecium and Chlamydomonas, they react to stimuli. So, for example, Paramecium moves towards oxygen, where there's air, because it needs oxygen. But here in the book, it says here it reacts to stimuli, it reverses its direction of movement. So it bumps into an object and then it goes into the other way. You can actually observe this under the microscope because it's a water organism. So it's when it moves around in water, it swims around in the water, it bumps into something, it just turns around and goes the other way. And Chlamydomonas needs light, and it is able to sense the presence of light. And there is even an eye spot. It's not a real eye, of course, but it's able to sense light, and it uses the eye spot to detect light, and it swims towards the light because it needs the light for photosynthesis. Yeah? And that's what you call response. I mean, they don't have a nervous system, okay? We human beings, we also respond. But we have a nervous system that does that, and they're able to respond without a nervous system. Excretion is the next point. Excretion is the release of waste products, and paramecium and chlamydomonas, they both produce waste products. The waste product of paramecium is carbon dioxide gas, so the organic molecules, the organic food that it eats is broken down and burned and oxidized and released. The waste is CO2. And by the way, we human beings do the same thing. And for chlamydomonas, it does photosynthesis, and its waste product is oxygen. It's a little bit unusual maybe to consider oxygen a waste product, but for these organisms, for photosynthetic organisms, oxygen is a waste product. Metabolism is basically simply the word that is used to describe that all of the chemical events in an organism is referred to as its metabolism. So there are enzymes in living things, and they do chemical reactions. So the sum of all chemical reactions in a living thing, that is referred to as a metabolism. Homeostasis is the next point, and homeostasis is the ability to keep constant internal conditions. Constant internal conditions. So, for example, paramecium, chlamydomonas, they should not have too much water in them, okay? Especially paramecium. So if there's too much water inside the cell, then the water is pumped out, okay? So the level of water should be within narrow limits. For example, we human beings also do homeostasis. Our body temperature has to be controlled, has to be kept within narrow limits. All living things do that, okay? And also chlamydomonas of course, also has to maintain constant internal conditions. Salt concentrations have to be constant. The amount of water has to be constant. There should not be too much waste inside the cell. Okay, that has to be kept low, and so on. And of course, reproduction. Now, that's kind of obvious. All living things reproduce, but there are two ways of reproduction. It's called this asexual reproduction in the form of cell division, and sexual reproduction. And now the sexual reproduction in paramecium, for example, is not even that easy. Some people wonder, how does this work? Well, they do so by exchanging part of their nuclei. They line up, they fuse together, and they exchange their DNA. So that is how paramecium does sexual reproduction. But they are also able to divide and reproduce asexually. All living things, of course, have to reproduce. So that is basically the... this was the top box, and now I'm just going to move on. And I would advise you, how do you study this? It's not really necessary to, I think you have to know, of course, everything here, but I think it's not so difficult to remember, because you just, they're kind of linked together. It's kind of clear that if they do photosynthesis for nutrition, then you produce oxygen as a waste product, okay? And photosynthesis, of course, that is metabolism, yeah? So you see how all of them are somehow linked together anyway, yeah? So the next point is, the next box is called multicellular organisms. So these are organisms, living things made of many cells. And the thing is now the following. The question is, why are there no organisms around which are big, made of one cell, okay, like, I don't know, like the size of a human being? Why are human beings made of many cells and not just one cell? I mean, that would be theoretically possible or not. Well, the idea is, the reason is the following. There are no large cells around because of its surface area to volume ratio. The larger an object is, or the larger a cell is, the lower its surface area compared to its volume. Some people have a difficulty understanding this because they think, if the organism is larger, then is not also the surface area larger? Well, yes, of course, in absolute terms, yes. But that's not what I'm actually talking about here. I'm talking about the surface area to volume ratio. Compared to the volume, the surface area is not is too small when the object becomes too large. However, the cells, they exchange... they need to obtain food or nutrients, and to get rid of waste products over their surface area, over the cell membrane. And if it's too large, then their surface area is not large enough to do all of the material exchange, okay? So it's not able to get enough oxygen, for example, if the cell is too large. So what does the cell do? Well, then the cell has to divide. And large organisms like human beings, for example, or other animals or even plants, have to be made of multiple cells, because this keeps the surface area to volume ratio of the individual cells sufficiently high. You need a high surface area to volume ratio. Now, multicellular organisms also show something that we call cell differentiation. And what does this mean? This means that there are different cell types which are specialized to do different functions. So human beings have nerve cells, skin cells, muscle cells, whatever, white blood cells, red blood cells, okay? And the thing is that they are all specialized, and these cells are called differentiated cells because, yeah, they are different from each other. And that leads us actually to the next box called cell differentiation. And in the cell differentiation, that is the following: when cells become specialized, this process is called cell differentiation. And it's kind of interesting because even though all of the cells have the same DNA in my body, all of the cells have the same DNA, they're not all the same. Okay, you see two drawings here, heart muscle tissue. The cells are pretty long, okay? And then you on the bottom, you have the pancreatic islet beta cells. And you see that there are a whole bunch of vesicles in there that produce, that release insulin, right? And so you see that both of these cells look quite different. They are supposed to do different things. So the pancreatic cell produces insulin, and the heart muscle tissue is there to contract and to pump the blood. But they have the same DNA, okay? So that is the interesting thing here. That's the genome. That's actually the word that you have to know. The genome, that's the genes or the DNA that is present, is the same in a multicellular organism. But because of cell differentiation, the cells look different, okay? And the last thing that we want to talk about in multicellular organisms, in multicellular organisms, what they do is something that we have. They have something called emergent properties, and this is where it's getting a little TOK-ish. What is an emergent property? Very briefly, an emergent property is a property that emerges. Bad thing, you shouldn't use the same words. That emerges when cells interact with each other. Okay, so that's a really bad definition because I'm just using the same words that I am supposed to use to define it. It is like characteristics that appear when cells interact with each other. So, for example, human beings, we have a, I just give you an example, we have a personality, okay? And this personality appears because different nerve cells interact with each other. Okay, and so these emergent properties can only be explained if we understand how many cells interact with each other. Okay, or we human beings can do so many things, or also other plants, multicellular organisms can do so many things that individual cells, single-celled, unicellular organisms cannot do. And the reason is because of these emergent properties that appear because different cells work together. So, for example, to give you another thing I can write, for example, okay? I can take notes. Maybe you're also taking notes right now, okay? So your muscles are contracting. They're moving the bones, okay? There are nerve signals going from your brain to your muscles to contract, to move your pen, right, for writing, yeah? These are all things that are only possible because so many different cells work together, okay? And that's something that is a unicellular organism like Paramecium is not able to do, obviously, right? So the ability to write, for example, is an emergent property. It's something that can only be explained if we understand how many different cell types are working together to do something useful so that something new appears. The new thing in this case being the ability to write. Okay, so these are just two examples that are related to human beings' personality, for example. Yeah, I mean, to give you an example, I cannot understand personality or human memory or human learning simply by looking at one individual nerve cell in your brain, right? I can't do that. It doesn't work like that. You have to understand how many nerve cells, billions of nerve cells, how they are interacting with each other, okay? So that is right now. Yeah, this was page 1 and 2 right now. Okay, and I wish you all the best.